Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Agile 2.0 presentation. Let me start by giving you a little bit of my mindset about why Agile 2.0 in the first place. To me, a process is a product of its era. It represents the constraints, it represents the needs, it represents the predicaments of the era. If we go back and look at the year 2001, when we conceived the Agile Manifesto, the world was very, very different from what it is today. No Facebook, no Instagram, no Pinterest. And I'm sure everyone here could go on and on with a lot of examples of this kind as to how dramatically different the world now is from when it was in 2001. And the premise of this presentation is that those differences lead us to an altogether different agile process. That you can't decouple the process by which we are working from what is happening in the outside world. And given everything that has been happening, we expect fairly major changes in the agile process, all the way down to the individual role level, for example, that of the product owner. A good way to think about the overall concept of this presentation is to look at interconnectedness. And I have got it here in two levels of zoom. The first level that you see here, and the second, which is the same thing with a better zoom. And the mental message that I would like everyone to keep in the coming 50, 60 minutes, is that this level of interconnectedness is a great difference between 2001 and now. And that it actually operates at two levels. On the one hand, it operates at the business level. The business now is interconnected and need to worry about a whole bunch of entities that it did not need to worry about 12 years ago. And the same is true for us as folks who are in programming. Our world, our connections, are not just the team inside the company, but in many ways, it is the communities which are outside the company. If you had the opportunity to attend Mick Kirsten's presentation earlier today, he specifically speaks a lot about the business of programming in the social code graph. And as you will see, I was greatly influenced by him. And some of the concepts that he introduced, I will be weaving in here into the nature of the agile process. Specifically, I will start with trying to convince you that this is even a more interesting era than we might have realized. Move on to the business of connecting the macro with the micro, particularly with respect to relative velocities in the market versus velocities in the company. Describe the rise of the API economy as a major phenomenon which A, addresses the disparity in velocities, and B, creates a whole new set of rules of the game. Move on to describe changes in both the process and the practices. And finally, tie all the things together in terms of how the agile process we expect will be connected to the business in the years to come. Now, starting with we live in interesting times, I will share with you things that we see in my practice in Qatar Consortium. There are about 40, 45 consultants like me. And I would say, no matter in what industry we consult, no matter what is the size of the company, small, medium, or large, we see every company being pulled in three directions. The fixed direction is the market. We all know of the beautiful quip from the Kluterian Manifesto that markets are conversations, and I, for one, could not agree more. However, what is happening more and more is that markets these days are being determined by actions. The fact that I say like on Facebook, or the fact that I say fancy it on the fancy, is sufficient to create a change in the market. And what happens in many ways is that my actions speak more than my words. Namely, the way I express myself by those simple actions in terms of my attitude towards other entities and my connection to those entities pretty much defines the nature of the markets nowadays. Now, the second major change that we see is in terms of the value chain. Value chains used to be linear, A to B, B to C, C to D, and so on and so forth. And they were static. Namely, the value chain that I had today was static, being the same for quite some time. What we see these days more and more is that value chains are being replaced by value webs. And the value webs have two interesting characteristics. A, you do not know at any point in time what is your value chain. It may be one thing this afternoon when I'm speaking, and could be quite a different thing when Sam will be closing the conference in an hour from now. So this predictability that it's A leading to B, B leading to C, C to D, etc., is no more there. And the other thing that it happens, and primarily as a result of that, is that value creation in a value web is very, very different from the traditional value creation. And as a matter of fact, our certainty about how value would be created is much lower than it used to be 10 years ago or 5 years ago. Last but not the least is the business of software as a service. And there is nothing particularly new here about it, other than that it affects the agile process in a very profound manner. I was recently in a software gig with a company who does oil exploration. And the software that I was working with them about is basically how do you capture data once you drilled 2 miles into the ocean or into the land? How do you process the data and how you interpret the data? So from a software perspective, I would say this was a fairly straightforward, agile engagement. From an operational and business perspective, this was quite different because the actual services that they provide, they provided by way of a technician guiding the drill, or by a geologist which interprets the drill, or by a business manager deciding to move the truck with the drill equipment and all the rest to another place. Those kind of services are as important and critical to them as the software per se. So the backlog in the case of this oil exploration company really became a service backlog as distinct from a software backlog. So your company is basically in the middle of those effects, those powers. You are being pulled on the market. You are being pulled on the value chain or web. And finally, your software is not only software as a service, but your customers more and more are about the services that are provided, not about the software. To start with the first dimension, namely this of the market, the diagram that you see here is taken from the work of Carlota Perez, and I really can't recommend her work too highly. In terms of the basic tenet of her work, We are talking about hyper-segmented markets. Namely, on the left-hand side at the bottom, you can see a standard cell phone. Now, if I buy some of the cell phones that you guys at Microsoft are producing today, or Apple is producing, the product is differentiated. It comes with a whole bunch of applications that do not come on a standard phone. If you go on the horizontal axis to the right-hand corner, I can customize the product in any way I want. So let's say I download a chess application or a real option analysis application or an Instagram or any other of a number of applications. And the phone becomes not only differentiated through the manufacturer, it becomes differentiated through my customizing it. So what happens, you have a very interesting, unique phone, which is my phone, and it can change as easily as downloading an application. And of course, any one of the squares that you see here in between could be market segments that you might want to target. Some tend more towards the differentiated, some tend more towards the custom. But the markets, while they are global, are becoming hyper-segmented, and perhaps even more important, they are fleeting. Namely, a market that exists right here and now in this presentation might not exist in the second half of the presentation. So you have the ongoing challenge of how do you race markets that are changing on an ongoing basis. Hence, the way you go about your business changes fundamentally. And as just one anecdote to illustrate it, we expect that the IT budget of the CMO would exceed the IT budget of the CIO in something like a couple of years from now. And the major reason for that is that in order to chase those fleeting markets, you have got to invest an unbelievable amount in data mining and analytics, etc. So the shift is not only in terms of what we do, the shift is quite deep in terms of the budgets. Now, if you go to the business of the value web, and again, instead of A connected to B connected to C, you have a dynamic structure there. What happens is that within this dynamic structure, what really counts are the network effects. And if you take a look at companies like Facebook and Instagram, while they may not be doing an awful lot in terms of product features, they were extremely effective in terms of the network effect. For example, if you take a look at Instagram, basically it was a set of filters that enables me as a novice photographer to make my pictures look a little better. And what I need is to move my picture amongst those filters. However, this very simple functionality and a lot of other companies in the market made all the difference in the world because the APIs were exposed in a way which enabled everyone and his grandmother and so many application developers to code to those APIs. So the nature of the competitive game, at least in photo sharing, changed from things like I can print my photos at Walmart and pick them up to a business of developers like you and me writing to the APIs of Instagram. And this creates the thing that I alluded to but have not really talked yet about and will hold on it for a few minutes, the business of the API economy. Namely, when the nature of the game is such that what one can or cannot do with the APIs is what counts, then the commercialization of the API becomes the name of the game. And a little bit more, in a few minutes, I will speak much more to it. Now, the business of not just service, but not just software, but everything as a service is actually becoming these days a matter of everything is a service. And as I mentioned a few minutes ago in my work with the Agile Exploration, with the oil exploration company, the software was being a servant to their set of services, and we literally used their software constructs for Agile in order to drive services. So it's about the integration of services, about the management of services, rather than the integration and management of the software. And for example, if you take a look at this company here, they literally pursue anyone and everyone of us with anything you wish as a service. I need to fix my fence. I need to get tickets for Diana Kroll. I need to have a babysitter. All those are being things that are now being offered based on the software. So where we are, I would contend, is in the confluence of four overarching trends. The first one is this of everything as a service and the monetizing of APIs that go with it. And Mashery, APIG, Threescale are perhaps the best known companies in terms of utilizing it. To the left, we are really seeing the phenomenon that software is not the way we used to do it. We are really not talking about enterprise software in the way you used to. We are talking about doing applications. And we are talking about doing applications in the way that a typical app store would do. Now, those two trends are further enhanced by the business of mobile and social in the following ways. A, mobile really gives us the ability to have super fresh web, not only in terms of content, but in terms of the software on it. And social actually gives us the ability to take the services that we talked about and to combine them together and to brokerage them, sometimes without writing a single line of code. So all in all, if you take a look at this picture and compare it to 2001, the overall set of transformations is really breathtaking. Now, what does it mean when we start looking closer at the agile process? What you see here is an application built on top of Instagram, which enables you at any major city in the world to watch the photo stream of what's going on in the city at any point in time. And the application itself is actually extremely simple. You put some photos on Instagram, the application takes your photos with my photos, with somebody else's photos, and gives you the stream that you see here. And the interesting thing about this stream is that this really tells you what is happening. Namely, if you think in terms of market analysis, this is not a 3 months old study about trends in New York. This is what actually people do in New York in midday. And for example, this screen scrape which I took is again from New York, but I took it at 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. or something like that. And you see a very, very different set of activities taking place than those that were taking place during midday. So the market that might have existed for you and me during the midday is by now gone. There is a very, very different market which is characterized by this photo stream. To make things even more exciting, Here is a website name of Wise Market, which basically makes a claim that you can open a store, a shop, in 60 seconds. And the way you do it is you take a picture of an asset and you mark its price, and bingo, you are in a business like a mini Amazon. And the importance of this clever site is not only in being quite novel in terms of Wise marking it, but being part of a much bigger movement of sites that are doing similar things. For example, on this website, which is called The Fancy, you can get this picture, which is shown in the visual, by way of just clicking on Fancy It. This creates a very, a very systemic... My apology. Can you hear me? Apology. This creates a very interesting tension and systemic tension between inbound dynamics and outbound dynamics. So outbound in the market, I can start a shop in 60 seconds. So any one of us who really wants to be a merchant can do it at minimal investment of time and energy and practically no money at all. If you take a look at the inside, I as a developer many times complained bitterly that I sat on my hands for 5 hours because a wireframe was not ready. And while we are talking here about two different things, namely one is a programming process and the other one is the merchandising process, the disparity in terms of the velocity is mind-boggling. Namely, during the 6 hours that I was sitting on my hands waiting for my wireframe, so many shops could have been opened by now to pursue so many opportunities. And during those 6 hours, the opportunity that existed in New York in a midday by now is gone. So what happens is, while definitely we have the market and the firm, and the firm participates in the market, if the two are not in alignment with respect to certain velocities, the opportunities fade away. What you see in this visual here is the classical economical theory of Cauchy on the left hand, and it really looks at the cost of transactions. Basically, the firm brings in transactions that it can execute more effectively than the market, and vice versa. It leaves to the market to carry out transactions which the market can do at a lower cost. So the boundary in the middle is dictated by the relative costs. Cost of doing it inside versus cost of letting the market do it. If you move to the right-hand side from transaction to the velocities, then what you have on the right-hand side is the thing that we talked about, relative velocities between the process inside and the way things happen in the market. So at the time that I was sitting for 6 hours on my hands waiting for the wireframe, so many things could happen in the market, so many shops have been opened. So what happens is I need to be able to address the market in quite a different manner than that's described in those two relative velocities. What this means is that I need to connect across the dividing line, which is a firm in the market. And what you see here is precisely the same picture of the previous slide, but with one interesting addition, namely, we put the API in the middle between the market and the firm. Now, you can say there is nothing new here. API have been forever, and Fox has been coding to APIs, etc., etc., etc. What I would say is different these days is that by way of exposing the APIs and utilizing it through developer communities, you can compensate for the systemic tension between the speed in-house and the speed outbound. So what happens, it's not a matter of I will hire 10 more developers to do the job. It's a matter of do I have a developer community that can code to my APIs much faster than I myself can code to my own APIs. Now, this actually is more than just a matter of speed. It's actually a matter of value and of information assets. Whatever assets my company has, when I expose the representation through an API, I create information asset. And this information asset, in conjunction with other companies' information assets, has value, for example, in terms of various trends that people are willing to pay good money for. And the term API economy is about our transacting in such a manner about my information resources together with yours, together with some other parties' information resources. And the thing is, the information about the resources that I actually have as a company can be more valuable than the resources themselves. And this is not just about pictures and images like we saw a little earlier in the photo stream from Instagram. This is true for anything that has representation as an information asset. So for example, normally my customer list is something that I would not share with anyone. This is a precious asset. However, if I could expose it in a way that certain trends within my customer list, together with certain trends in your customer list and some other people's customer list, would be available to Wall Street analysts or to industry analysts or to investors, this could be of tremendous value in terms of building information resources on top of the real resources. So what happens, we are moving towards an economy in which A, assets could be less valuable than their information representation, and second, economy in which people transact around those assets. If you take a look at this screen scrape from Schlumberger Ocean App Store, Schlumberger is obviously in the business of drilling for gas and for oil, and they would provide you any service in the world that you might wish in order to find oil in Antarctica or any other place. However, at this point in time, they have exposed enough of the data that they have collected in such a manner to enable a whole bunch of applications that you see here to be readily available for sale through Schlumberger. So what happens, a company which was and still is extremely successful in oil exploration is shifting its business from this wrenching work of drilling 2 miles into the ground into utilizing the aggregated information that this drilling provides and having a whole bunch of developers the world over develop one kind of application after another based on it. And there is a very subtle and important thing in this transformation Traditionally, when I was a product owner, I would manage my application, and the API would be part of the whole package. Namely, I would do both. So if I change the priorities on stories in my backlog, I might have done it on the application, or I might have done it on the API, and possibly on other things. But the whole thing, namely the application and the APIs, were part of my backlog and part of my grooming and prioritization. What happens now is a decision which assets you expose and which you don't expose becomes a major business decision, and it basically dictates your business design. For example, you can decide that the API that you exposed would be open, or you can decide that you will pay for it. With any call, you will pay for it. So all of a sudden, this business of first defining and then implementing an API turns out from an architectural and coding decision to a major business design decision. And what you see in this diagram here is the various companies who are doing it, the various kinds of business designs that they built around their various APIs. And this is not something that you can take lightly in terms of this too shall pass. If you take a look at this diagram from Programmable Web, the number of APIs is doubling on a shorter and shorter time scale. At this point in time, probably we have something like 10,000 exposed APIs, and in a very short time, we should probably have 20,000, and so on and so forth. So this is not something that just happens on the sideline. This is something that has tremendous momentum in terms of the growth, and you can conjecture a whole bunch of API economy use cases, and the list that is taken here is a sublist from the source indicated at the bottom. Folks get into the API economy when they need a second mobile application. They get into it when they realize that their website is being screenscraped very often. They get into it when they need to provide content in a flexible manner. So what happens, this is not restricted to one esoteric application or another. This is something that happens in dozens and dozens of use cases. Now, what does it mean to the agile process that we all know and love? What you have here is a classical picture or visual of the backlog. And what happens is usually we would groom the backlog during some period or after some period. For example, in Scrum, we would work together for 2 weeks. We would do the stakeholder demo, we would do the retrospective, and based on various points that come up during the demo and during the retrospectives, we shall groom the backlog accordingly. We shall add a story, delete a story, split a story, etc. Now, these days, rather than happening every 2 weeks on the boundary between one split ending and another one starting, this is happening more and more on an ongoing basis. And it's happening more and more on an ongoing basis because change has become constant. Second, when change is constant and you groom the backlog on an ongoing basis, the business of every 2 weeks become a little weak in the knees, so to speak. Namely, if you need to groom on an ongoing basis, you cannot be lackadaisical and release only every 2 weeks. Rather, you need to be able to release in a very, very different cadence and much faster cadence. And this is a cadence which basically is different from the needs of the programming community. Namely, yes, it may be beneficial programming-wise to batch things to batches of 2 weeks or 1 week or whatever the cadence that you want. However, it does not meet the business needs anymore. Third, every good product owner, of course, listens to his or her customers and puts stories on behalf of them in the backlog. However, what you see when you have a vibrant developer community is that they are very, very vocal about their own needs, and that actually some of the stories would get straight into your backlog, not through your own product owner, but through various folks who are instrumental in the developer community. And last, but not the least, there is a question of who is a persona. Namely, traditionally we would write a story something like, as a security investigator, I would like to, whatever the action is and whatever the benefit. Now, if you think about the structure that we are discussing, namely having first the company or the firm, B, the developer community, and three, the actual user, to whom do you write the story, or for whom do you write the story? For example, I could easily build a case of, as a energetic developer in developer community XYZ, I would like to do so and so, and this is very, very different from the user story, because what I need as a programmer who programs to the API is quite different from that of the user who uses my application. So all of a sudden, this business that most user stories are about the user become very, very difficult to clearly differentiate, because your developers in the developer community have become full-fledged users, and maybe even more important users than those that actually use your product. If you take all those things together, we expect in the year to come to see the following transformations in the agile process. A, the product backlog stops being my backlog and becomes shared backlog. And a big part of it is that of the definition and implementation of the APIs. Second, the sprint backlog becomes less and less a matter of this is for the development team. For example, we had here a DevOps tracks, and DevOps folks are full participants in the sprint planning and in the work on the sprint backlog. Finally, the business of the backlog becoming distributed. Namely, the conventional wisdom is that you never split your backlogs across sites because you do not want decisions to be sub-optimized. You want them to be optimized at the overall backlog level. What happens with developer communities is that either you completely open up your own backlog to that of the community, or otherwise you need to live with two backlogs. One backlog is the API backlog that you do in your own company, and the other one is the application backlog that the developer community is working on. So the conventional wisdom of no distributed backlogs does not quite hold it anymore in the context of developer community. Finally, when we are operating in the manner of continuous change and continuous grooming, the business of devices like burn down charts loses much of its effectiveness. And we see more and more Fox moving into the business of cycle time metrics rather than bear and up or bear and down charts or the like. Moving on to the roles, the role of the product owner changes drastically. It has been naturally a product and business focus. I want to generate a ton of money on my product. These days, it becomes very much about customer discovery, and it becomes very much the business of business design based on the exposed APIs. So what happened, the set of skills that a product owner needs to be good at changes in a very drastic manner. It's more about the customer than about the product, and it's more about the business design than about the whole application. Moving on to the Scrum Master, it used to be the case that the Scrum Master would be typically for the whole of the release. And what we see more and more in our engagements is that this is changing. That a Scrum Master is not nominated in advance for the lifetime of the release. Rather, that various Scrum Masters rise organically in the team based on their expertise. So if we are optimizing a certain API during this week and next week, the Scrum Master would probably, at least de facto, be the person with the most domain knowledge. So Scrum Masters stop being for a duration of 3 months or 6 months or whatever. They become more and more something spontaneous when people rise up in the team. Finally, the business of the self-organizing team becomes even stronger than it used to be, because what is a developer community? You have some bylaws, of course, but basically it is a self-organizing community. So what happens, self-organization becomes even stronger than it used to be, and the models of being able to work with self-organizing teams become more and more open source type models rather than traditional management models that we used for so many years. If you move on to the ceremonies and events of Agile, daily stand-up meetings we see universally as being there to stay. Namely, I am hard-pressed to think about any engagement in which people did not say, this is working for us, this is excellent, we continue to do it. The sprint planning, which we used to do every 2 weeks or 3 weeks or so, turns out to be more and more that of continuous grooming. So the two-week boundary loses much of its batching capabilities. And finally, the business of the demo, which again was every 2 weeks or some such periods, loses much of its effectiveness and value, because if I release in a continuous deployment mode, by the time the 2 weeks have passed, my customers have already given me the feedback whether feature XYZ was appropriate or was not appropriate, whether to develop it in a second direction, in a certain direction or in another direction. So the ritual of every 2 weeks we demonstrate it is being overtaken by the continuous feedback from the customers. Now, this leads to the last piece of the puzzle, which is, okay, with all those changes, how do we integrate things between the process and the business? What you see here is a traditional view in Scrum of how this is being done. You have the cycle in the middle, which is the steady state. You launch a team, the team works for 2 weeks, every day they have their stand-up meeting. By the end of 2 weeks, we have potentially shippable code. And after a certain amount of sprints of this nature, the code is released. On the left-hand side, you have what I would call the business preparations. You need to have a business case. you need to have a set of sponsors. You need to have a budget. You need to have infrastructure. You need to have a team. And of course, you need to have preliminary backlog, and if possible, preliminary release plan. Now, this model, when you apply it at scale, actually has some problems in terms of being able to manage it systemically. And the problems go back again to the business of relative velocities. Namely, certain things that we do in the fashion described in this visual are just not fast enough. And the following visual, courtesy of Ericsson, is a way they try to do it in their scale and scope. So for example, if you look at the strategy in the top line, at Ericsson, the process is annual. Strategy is starting, they kick it off, I believe, in the spring, do a whole bunch during the year of working on it. Late fall, they try to finalize it, and by the beginning of the year, they come up with a new budget, etc. However, sensible that doing it annually is, if you take a look at the things on the right, things change in a pace that you would be wise to feed information into the process on a monthly basis. You wouldn't necessarily change your strategy every month, but in terms of capturing information, integrating information, and discussing whether you need to revise your strategy, you will be tracking it on a monthly basis, and you will change possibly your strategy a few times a year based on the data that was accumulated. Portfolio planning underneath it is of similar nature. Many companies do portfolio planning and decide this product shall live and this product shall die on a quarterly basis. However, the data that is needed to feed this kind of decision these days has to be fed in on a weekly basis. So what happens, the balance that they struck is that yes, they are doing portfolio planning every 3 months, but on an ongoing basis, every week, data is being fed into it, and if appropriate, portfolio decisions are being made in a faster fashion, more frequent fashion than once a quarter. Now, this to itself, I would say, is something that a lot of companies have certain difficulty in implementing, but it becomes much more difficult when we talk about the theorem and the market along the lines that we discussed earlier today. A, you need to think in terms of an app store, rather than here is my team of developers and testers who would be doing it. Second, you need to take into account that actually your developer community is more important than your own team of programmers, because a good developer community would do much more than you can do even if you double your resources or triple them, etc. If you accept those premises, then there is a fundamental change in the way we manage the business and certainly manage software, which is the business of projecting certainty. If you take a look at traditional management theories, they are all about projecting certainty. I know what the market is. I know what the market share we will acquire in 2 years or whatever amount of time. I know which products I will be bringing to the market, etc., etc., etc. The currency of so many executive and executive forums is that of projecting the certainty. Now, this certainty these days, irrespective of turbulence in the market, is not any better than the certainty that you can have with respect to your developer community. And I would contend the certainty that you can have with respect to the developer community is no higher than that that you can have with respect to open source. So all of a sudden, the layers of reviews and artifacts that we produce to show with high degree of certainty, we hope, what would happen in 2 years down the road are only as good as how we can influence our developer community. And you know what? We can incense a developer community, but there is no way to go to a developer community and say, thou shalt do this by such and such date. So what happens, a fundamental philosophical element of management is these days proven wrong, namely projection of certainty and building about it becomes incompatible. What you can do instead, and some of our clients are actually starting to do it, is cope with the uncertainty through real options analysis. You pivot and pivot and pivot once again as things change. And you pivot in a way of best managing your own portfolio, which of course includes the developer application at this point in time. So the tools of real options analysis do not ensure you certainty because it can't be ensured anymore, but they give you better outcome at the end rather than if you stand here today and say, and in 2 years, we shall have 27.8% penetration of the market. So from this perspective, the agile process is shifting from inbound. Here is my team. We have 6 sprints in this release, and we have a hardening sprint at the end, and we shall release in June or whatever the parameters are. It becomes much more of a matter, how do I incent and how do I influence, and as appropriate, how I constrain my outbound developer community. And this actually is not a matter of because we want to do so, but it's a matter of being the only way available to mitigate between what's happening inside and what's happening outside. So velocity, we talked about it. In order to be able to respond to the stream of photos from Paris or from New York or any other cities in fast enough time, our own developers are not enough. It's a zillion and one of developers who see the opportunity to code to our APIs, to create new value, which can give us the velocity which is necessary to compete in the market. Likewise, for creativity and ideation, we may be a very creative company and we connect the dots between your brain and my brain and somebody else's brain very effectively. However, the scale of being able to connect dots in developer community can be orders of magnitude bigger than any company. So what happens, my creativity, if I work in within a development organization of 100 folks, is, everything else being equal, much inferior to my creativity when I have got thousands or tens of thousands of developers in my developer community. So it's not only a matter of the velocity, it's a matter of the kind of new ideas and creativity that get generated. And finally, the same thing is true with respect to scale. If you take a look at the number of applications in a typical app store today, no single company, no matter how rich, can generate this scale of applications. And it becomes, again, something that needs to be done by developers outside the companies. And the net of it is that you shape the force of things to come, or the shape of things to come, through a shaping platform. And this is work that, this is work that Hegel and Brown and Davison cited at the very bottom of it. had been proposing about 2 years ago and later on published it in terms of the book entitled The Power of Pull. And in very simplistic terms, the concept of a shaping platform is that no company can go it alone anymore. That you can only do one of two things. You can create a shaping platform to which other companies would join, or you can choose to join the shaping platform of another company. My contention today is that as far as programming is concerned, and remember we talked about programming moving on and overflowing into services, Agile is really our shaping platform. So the business ideas coming from Hegel, Davison, and Brown represent the principles as they apply to the business side. The actual construction of such platforms, in my humble opinion, is primarily a matter that we, as programmers, will be doing through the Agile process. So basically, the two come together in Agile being the shaping platform for our companies. Thank you very much, and I will, of course, gladly answer any and all questions.
Thank you, Israel. I have time for a couple of questions. Anybody have one, or are you going to rush the stage? I see one in the back here. Richard, it's just a little slider on the bottom. You go counterclockwise there. And somebody over here. So tell you what, Richard, we're going to handle one here while you solve your hardware issue.
Thank you for the wonderful seminar. The question is this prediction or pattern applicable to all the companies or certain segment of the market? For example, the brick and mortar companies selling cars or manufacturing cars, is that also applicable?
I believe so. As a matter of fact, if you take a look at some of the things that Rolls-Royce is doing, and they are not doing cars, they are doing engines for airplanes. They also do cars, of course. It's certainly applicable there. So while I am a little reluctant to make sweeping statements that things are of universal nature, I would say the consultants in the practice and myself have not found yet any instantiation where it does not really apply. Namely, in each market that we go to, in each industry, and in whatever is the size of the company, whether this is three guys and a dog or 30,000 folks, we see those things applying. So am I 100% certain? I am not. But in terms of all the indicators that we have seen so far, we believe it's universal.
Back in the back there, I think that's Chad.
It is. You certainly gave us a lot of information to consider. If I could summarize, I mean, are you describing an enterprise platform for crowdsourced software development? Is that really what you're talking about here? Is that the API, the way that we will construct software moving forward is different than it is today?
This is one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is that the nature of the economy changes, namely that the APIs create value, create productive assets by the very nature of their being exposed and being combined with similar information assets from other companies. So we are seeing a different way in which the software would be done together with the way value will be generated.
Thank you.
Maybe one more, and then we'll call it a day, or call it a session. Way over there. Okay.
Did you mention that there are marketplaces of API that are starting to appear, or you see them appear? The transaction of buying API, how is going to happen?
A company can create value by way of exposing APIs. A lot of folks are noticing it, and as a result, a lot of folks are opening their APIs, and more developers code to them. So if you go back to the chart which shows the number of APIs, how it's doubling, I think this is as conclusive a trend as I have seen. Namely, by now we probably have 10,000 APIs, in a little while we should have 20,000, then 40,000, etc. So the best of the brightest, if I may use this phrase, and they are shown on the slide which was API going into business design, are already doing it. We see a lot of folks, and again at any size of operation, getting the message and starting to do similar exposure of API for whatever assets that they have. Let me perhaps try to add one more sentence and to give an analogy. In the 90s, when the World Wide Web, the Internet, were becoming available, there were various companies who did not at the beginning think that they need to play in this thing, in these opportunities, but pretty much everyone that I know was forced one way or another to play. For example, everyone has a storefront today. I would dare say that I believe the API economy, along the lines that we talked about, is as great a transformation that the question is, shall I play or shall I not play? The only question is how soon you need to start playing, because not playing is not an option.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
And that brings us almost to the end. We have about a 10-minute break, and then Sam will close out the show. Okay, so see you back here in 10 minutes.